get to me.
We now return you to your regularly scheduled review of the movie Free Jack. There we go. Oh, this is bum, it. Bum, 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 holy bum, shit. Bum, 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 so Zencastr was doing its little thing again. Yeah. It came up with his bullshit. And then we tried to start another session and it didn't do that.
Yeah, it's like.
And so now this is a third session for the second part. Hopefully for the next hour, we're going to finish talking about fucking Free Jack.
Yeah. I mean, this,
wow.
This happens once, like, at least half of our recordings. This happens.
It's fine.
And I know that it's me. It's usually me. I'm usually the problem.
Look, all you did was like plug something in and it jacked up the whole fucking.
Yeah, that shouldn't happen.
It's not even on the same.
I'm telling you, man, the Chinese like, USBs start broadcasting to the Chinese Communist Party the minute you plug them in.
It's Zencastr talk.
I will join you guys.
They will listen to me, Free Jack. Okay.
But it's okay anyway, because I think we kind of realized that we skipped a scene.
We did.
Just kind of jump right back into and it's a pretty good scene for Rene Russo.
It's a good way to reintroduce, you know, Julia 18 years later, even though she looks exactly the same, just with a slightly different haircut.
It's so Rene Russo.
It's like the high stakes corporate world, and they're in some negotiations with a Japanese firm. And it's totally like that 80s gung-ho bullshit fear of America had their lunch eaten by the Japanese in the trade war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jonathan Banks's character definitely has like Robert Duvall from Network vibes.
And that's why we are movie. Where we are. Yeah.
It's very RoboCop.
Yeah.
And
so we get like a trade negotiation between them, and Michelette wants to like back down because he thinks the deal's not going to go through, but then Julie says goes ahead and pushes through with it anyway, and she gets the thing done and makes Michelette look good, even though he's a jerk, and it's really well done.
She gets the mineral rights, man.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're talking about, like, mineral rights to, like, land.
$3 million on the table, man!
Yeah, and the, oh, man, her line
it's great, hoo-ha.
Is great. What does she say? She's like, she says, we couldn't have done this without you, Michelette. Perhaps if we had more people like you, then we wouldn't have lost the trade war. Dun, dun, dun. And it's
a good one.
You know what? You don't see that sort of like that sort of positivity towards women in an atmosphere like that.
Here's the thing. It wasn't like a performative girl boss moment, really.
No, it really wasn't.
It really wasn't. It's
she served his ass.
More fucking accurate to real life.
And he hates her.
It's really subtle. It's so nicely done. It's really like there's a whole story behind there that they didn't need to tell because they just showed it. It's great.
It's just they're showing it because like his face afterwards, you know?
Yeah. This is good. Like an example of good exposition.
Yeah, it is.
You know what their relationship is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just and, in this very short scene.
Julie has to take a call from McCandless, the big boss, and this is
Anthony fucking Hopkins.
This is where I first realized that they used a jack for the fucking logo of McCandless Corporation.
Yeah. I mean, funny. It makes sense that, you know, you would call them bone jackers or free jacks based on using the jack as a logo.
They're a jack that they couldn't catch in their first
place. And is it like
I just want you guys to say jacking more.
And so we see Sir Anthony on vidphone prefiguring a Zoom call.
Yes. I love that he's in this movie just because like the motherfucker's like writing sonatas and like doing orchestra shit as for fun. Meanwhile, he's in this movie.
Yeah.
He was actually so he filmed this movie when he was going to be in the country for the Oscars anyway, and he's not really in it that much. Like he acted in front of a blue screen with a couple people for like a couple weeks, but he does not have a fond memory of this movie and says he wouldn't have done it again.
Didn't this come out? This came out the same year as Silence of the Lambs, right?
Correct. Yeah.
So, I mean, he's probably more tied up with that.
He's cooking bigger fish, but you know what?
I think this movie caught a lot of that wave.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah they're really good. Anthony Hopkins as being in it. And we remember coming out of the theater saying, like, he wasn't really in it. Like,
Mick Jagger was in it more.
Yeah. You know, for someone who didn't have a good time, he did an incredible job, though.
He had fun.
He must
I think
have.
The sheer novelty of being on set with professionals in a field that, like, he's a rock star. Like, he goes on stage, he knows the songs, he knows the steps, he knows the fucking kicks and all the whole nine yards, right? He knows the prancing. He knows, like, what to do there. That's his world. This is different because this is, like, ordered. You're going to do it a bunch of times.
Mm-hmm.
here's the green screen bullshit. Table.
Yeah.
Right. You know, like,
and he'd been in a couple films before this, but nothing with this wide release and this type of product, like a professional production like this.
Yeah. Mm. It's a crazy fucking sci-fi movie. And he's like the sort of bad guy kind
of. There's also stories of like, post shoot the day or whatever, like, Mick and would take Emilio and they'd go to like Claremont Lounge and a bunch of the strip clubs in Atlanta and just like party.
Hey,
amazing.
I mean, that's like the Bob Hoskins thing.
Yeah.
Dennis Hopper.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Let's party, man.
So McCandless talks to her a little bit, says, oh, I need you to get to Japan. You know, there's a big deal over there. I need you to close for me. So she's supposed to get out of the city and she ends up, she's going to head back to her house. But this is where we cut to the street scene with Brad and Alex kind of walking through the cyberpunk streets of New York again. And this part I thought was kind of cool because Alex's character is coming a little more into himself. He's becoming a little more confident. And this is actually the scene where he has pretty much the exact same costume he had from Young Guns. He's got like a tan duster. He's got like a crumpled hat. He's got
a
Henley shirt underneath.
Straight out of the 1930s. Really everybody who's like poor in this movie looks like they're from the Great Depression.
Can we just appreciate the restraint from the director to not play any Bon Jovi?
Well,
we get Scorpions at the end, but like, ain't no Bon Jovi, ain't no Young Gun shit.
But this is the closest to Young Guns because this is the scene also where he gets to be a little bit of a badass because the guy we were talking about earlier, the guy who's missing the 4 teeth, pulls a gun on him and says something kind of cryptic and a little bit of edgelordy.
Because he's looking at it.
He's like, you keep looking at me, you'll see me fucking shoot you.
You'll see me kill you. Yeah. And
which, you know, as far as like throwaway one-liners from like, you know, fucking basically an extra, not bad.
Yeah.
This is pretty great because then Alex looks away, but then just takes out his Glock and just sets it on the table. And it's like, I'm here for business, buddy. You want to serve it up?
Yeah. Then just goes back to eating his dog food.
Yeah. I also really appreciated that interaction between Brad and the waitress. I thought it was cute.
Yeah, they knew each other.
He's a regular.
Yeah, he's a regular.
Because he comes in and he like kind of grabs his crotch and he's like, "What's the special today?" And then she's like, "You're looking at it."
You know, I gotta say, I really like a good diner scene. Mystery Med had some great ones,
especially one with a gunfrontation in it. You know, and
he said
Emilio definitely drops that Young Gun smile that I'll make you famous. It's the same smile from Young Gun.
Yeah. Yeah.
God. I saw those in theaters too.
Also, we have like,
hey, they're fun. I don't give a shit. And the second one's not even as good, but they're fun. It's a great cast. It's fun.
While Brad's at the video phone too, we have a shot of like a poster with Einstein on it.
Oh,
it's
a
quote that says, imagination is more important than knowledge, I think.
Is that what it says?
I think so.
My video was so potatoed I couldn't read it.
But then they attribute the quote to someone named Kia Ora. I don't know who that is.
Okay.
I don't understand.
Sure. But it was weird that they like focused on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't add anything to the story.
Brad comes back from the phone.
Well, first of all, thematically.
As you said, Brad made a very good point to say like, hey, don't come near this phone. They can ID you on the phone. But we all know Brad's going behind his back to double cross him. Brad's a shit bag anyway.
Yeah, of course, of course. Yeah,
I like how he figures it out. I like how smart everyone is in this movie, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Alex is pretty on the ball for being as like confused as he starts the movie. By the end of it, he just trusts no one, and he's pretty sharp.
Go ahead. Oh, you. I guess I'll go free Jack on by myself. Because he ends up like schmoozing over back to his table. He's like, what the fuck you got a piece out for? You're going to draw his attention. And he tells him, he's like, man, I'm going to be eating caviar. We're all set up. I've talked to the car. And he's like, what do you mean you're going to be eating caviar?
Yeah.
And he's like, it's a term of expression. What do you mean? You're already paranoid like these fucks, you know?
I know. It's a good exchange.
It's a really good exchange.
Wait a minute. He like Columbo's his ass.
McCandless security shows up, and McCandless security is all shooting the Star Wars stun blast. That's the whole thing, too, where they chase him like, oh, we don't want to damage the meat. So they have stun weapons that they're using against
him. Yeah, like blue taser. Laser.
Those are really fun props, I think.
And they're about as accurate as a stormtrooper.
They're also the same rifles that they used in Prayer of the Roller Boys. So, it's the same. It's a Mini 14 with a stock kit on it, like a rifle kit.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, and it's got like this little like electric tube attached to it.
Yeah,
and that's where the little the laser beam.
That's where the pew pew comes from.
But you can also tell that they're like they're like plasma, basically.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't see what the guns looked like at all, but I knew that
black squares.
So we're just going to assume you just didn't see this movie. You heard it.
Half the time I'm sitting here listening to him, I'm like, oh, that's what that was. Oh, that's what that was. I'm like learning. Nice. I watched this. I spent 4 hours watching this fucking movie, and I,
dude, it was on Tubi. Like, we should have just told you.
I'm gonna put. Yeah, you did. But I was like, isn't this on YouTube? And it's son of a bitch. And I'll put the link in the Discord, so that'll give you another reason to go to the Discord.
But once they have a big shootout there in the diner, then he starts running again, run, and we get a pretty cool motorcycle chase. There was
his back, and he's like, I got him, and then it, like,
well, he spills the boomer's food, and then he's so pissed off that he shoots Brad in the chest,
yeah.
And this happened for like an instant when they're getting shot at with the soft ammo, let's call it that,
the pew pew,
yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a blink and you'll miss it, but they show one of the like shelves and there's a rat crawling up around there.
There's so much environment.
Laser burst. Smack me.
But yeah, Mojo dies. He's just shot in on the floor by the boomer. Mm-hmm. God. Yeah. And I mean, that's what he is. Come on. You're right.
There's a big chase. Alex does get a hold of a motorcycle. He knocks one of the cops, one of the corporate cops, off the motorcycle.
There's like a bunch of pallets in his way.
Yeah.
Rams that motorcycle into another cop, pushing him through a door. And then it's a big circle because they end up back in the same diner, which
also
had like a slaughterhouse in the basement somehow. Yeah.
It's insane. It's great. I love it. It's actually a really fun chase scene. It's dumb as fuck, especially because what the cops are wearing. Because again, all the armor and shit is like shittier stormtrooper shit.
Kind of, a little bit.
They look like your average SWAT team member.
But it looks practical. It's weird. They did a really weird thing to me.
Yeah.
Like, it looks dumb as fuck, but it works. It looks like something that
was like something else it reminded. There were like a couple of other movies where it's just basically they just gave them like fucking. Mm-hmm. Basically football pads.
Yes.
Or like these are like skateboard pads, like the elbow stuff with like
The bone jackers look a little more like motocross, soldiers, slightly Mad Max-ish, and the corporate security forces are more like Starfleet uniforms
kind of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Isn't their logo like peace or something, or did I just like hallucinate that?
No, it's a fucking jack.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right. Gotcha.
It looks maybe a little bit like a peace sign when it's flashing by, they got but because but because Alex has been reported over the wire, now the bone jackers know where he's at. And there's like a big piece here where you just kind of have to figure out what happens off screen. I think it had something to do with all the cutting. But basically, Alex escapes this to run to Julie's house. He found Julie's address through Brad.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this also doesn't make a little sense because Brad was saying,
It's
behind the Palisades. So that implies that, she's living in this really nice part of New
York. Posh area, yeah.
Yeah, that's, basically a gated community, gated corporate community.
Mm-hmm.
Looks much nicer. Like, no trash on the streets.
They do explain later how Alex can get into Julia's apartment. But how does he get into the district?
How does he get past the roadblocks? I guess he has a cop bike, but he doesn't look like a cop. He looks like an outlaw.
Doesn't he run the fucking gate at one point?
Yeah, he does. He blasts past a checkpoint, and they're like, fuck.
It's pretty funny.
Yeah, they're like, hey, a free jack is coming this way. Zoom. Oh, shit, there he goes. Yeah,
they're definitely like the cops off of Demolition Man,
They're listening to their favorite commercial as this is happening.
I also thought, too, the reason they probably didn't film in New York is, one, it's going to be expensive. Two, New York looks much older than what is being shown to us of what this city looks like. And
there's that one chase that goes, and it looks like it's like fucking Lower Wacker.
Yeah, it's
and I'm like, where did they film this? And that's when I like pause the movie and I'm looking it up. What the fuck?
No, New York even to this day looks like old because it is like as fuck, and it's really hard to to film something that's supposed to be like future. I don't know. I know why they filmed it in Georgia because Atlanta, Georgia is like the second Hollywood, but it's
well,
it's,
I mean, they, there's like funny. I think the state of Georgia has like a bunch of, you know, kind of kickbacks and stuff. Like you'll see that with gaming and stuff. You'll see that
like
a
lot. It's like their Toronto,
very attractive.
Yeah, it's very, it's really
for tax purposes. There.
So there's a lot of incentives and whatnot, and that's why like a lot of these scenes are just done up alleys with like just a bunch of
something New York
shit going on.
Something New York definitely doesn't have, which are alleys,
right? Yeah.
So
and that's
we get to we get to Julie's posh apartment, and this is the part that's like a little weird. Like Alex has come in there, we don't know it yet. Julie gets
some
home
weird gender related things going on.
He's like waiting in the bathroom. Not the best.
Not creepy.
Look, buddy, when you're approaching a woman's house and she hasn't seen you in 18 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, correction. Yeah. He's been dead for 18 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As far as anyone knows, he was atomized.
Yes. He's
creeping in her bathroom, smelling her creams or something. I don't know.
Don't say cream.
And
checking
she
out, like the bidet
comes.
Say less. What the fuck?
He comes into the mirror behind her and freaks her out, and she runs away because she thinks like she knows he's obviously he must be a free jack, but she's like, I don't know who you are. Somebody stole your body. Like she knows.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Him. Yeah. Well,
which
not a free jack, but fair. Like, but you know, yeah. What free jacks become when they get caught.
Yeah, it's a fair. It's
she
a
doesn't
fair
know what part of the process this dude's in, and apparently they're so bad at like capturing these people that like everyone has like a whole like distrust of them automatically. Like,
yeah,
yeah. And then he it's wrestles weird. Her, which is because she is obviously like, I don't know who you are, but you're not him. I'm going to run away. And he just chases her. He's frustrated, and he just tackles her at one point, just gets her on the couch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, not great.
You know? Not great. And he's just like, please believe me. And then like she manages to like, you know, talk him off her. And then she's like, oh no, you're him, because his voice is setting off like some sort of alarm or something. And then she just hits the panic button and, you know, calls the cops.
Intruder, and then everything goes off.
Yeah.
She does like a check on the computer. She's like, computer, has anyone come in my house? And computer's like, nope, didn't happen. And it's like, okay. But this guy, you realize
his voice print wasn't encoded, but her door was open
according to him, and this is where we realize that the bone jackers set a trap because they're clever.
But
also not clever enough to get there on time, because he escapes and they knock on her door by throwing a flashbang into the room. Like,
she's just standing there. This does not make any sense, because they established later that
look,
Mick Jagger has her door code. He can just walk in.
So
he doesn't have to blow it off the fucking hinges.
I'm like, and also, hey, however, get out of the way of the door.
However, I think maybe it was just to set up this really theatrical moment where, you know, walks in. And he does have a really good line delivery here.
Yeah.
Because just the way that he says it, he's like, where's Furlong?
Sure, but he wouldn't be able to.
A little smile.
She wouldn't have been able to hear him from the concussion grenades he threw before that.
Right.
Timing.
All she
is
has
everything.
Is tinnitus.
Like, yes, seriously. But we do get my favorite scene, which is Furlong goes into like the underground, or I guess a garage.
Yeah, parking structure.
He goes to a garage and he finds the champagne delivery man.
Oh.
He's like, is it, and has the best line. He's like, is this your truck? He's like, no, it's the company's. Pulls out Glock and points it at him, not anymore, and just takes off in the champagne delivery pickup truck.
Which is my favorite vehicle.
It's my favorite. We have incredible vehicles. This stupid truck is my favorite.
No, but this is probably my favorite scene. It's the tank chase across the city.
It's great.
Like I said, Vincendix has a whole mechanized battalion.
All the vehicles.
We have to stop for a second. Okay. He's in this like a pickup truck with kind of like a modified cab.
Like champagne cooler.
Alex.
Thing.
Alex. Yeah.
Alex does.
Okay. Alex does,
And this is like a hexagonal a sort of shape.
Catch.
And it's a wood panel.
Yeah.
Like the fucking whatchacallit? Goddamn
station wagon.
National Lampoon Station Wagon.
National Lampoon Station Wagon.
Yeah, it's supposed
to
look like
a wagon. Wood panel.
Yeah.
It's
I think it's a Dom Perignon truck. I think it's Dom Perignon.
And it's just, he's just swinging it around, doing these like wide turns and drifting a little bit. And these like bottles of champagne are just blowing out the fucking edges.
At one point, they're computer generated and it's super obvious, but.
Not to me.
No. Okay. Hold on. This is the only time you're ever going to get this from me, I bet, for the rest of the episode. I also didn't know they were computer generated.
Oh shit. Well, it was only in one shot.
I did not know.
It's like a blink and you'll miss it thing.
But it was probably a thing like the director was like, not enough fell out this time.
I was having too much fun with this shitty champagne vehicle.
And you know this is where you have to realize
the vehicles in this movie I feel like they wanted to like do some merchandising because it looks like something that you would put like
looks like a toy.
Well, they have some real flashy vehicles in this. I was going to say that for the tank chase scene here, where the Bonejackers are chasing across the city. First of all, you realize there's no police. Like there's the corporate security and there's the mercenaries. And they're chasing across the city in these like bright red and blue tanks. And like I looked this up, the tank that Mick Jagger's in is actually it's a Cadillac Commando.
Oh my
tank
god!
That was built,
of course, it
very
is.
Similarly. Like the MRAPs were built to solve a problem in the Iraq War. These Cadillac Commandos were built to solve an intractable problem in the Vietnam War, doing like a supply run security. They're actually an amphibious vehicle, but again, it's
that checks out.
Yeah, that looks like it.
And again, on the impression of modern times, the steel armor is Cadilloy. It's a proprietary alloy made by Cadillac for these armored vehicles that they produced for the war in Vietnam. By the 90s, they were like a surplus item. And I guess Hollywood snatched a bunch up, but also you can imagine how many ended up in police departments. So
I'd rather them be in movies.
I'd rather have one.
I did really like the purple one that you see near the end that's named Sheila.
That
was amazing.
Like it had like the whole bomber pinup girl kind of thing going on, but I couldn't read it. I didn't know what it was. I was like, well, clearly this is cool.
This incredible shade of purple with like a swoosh under it. And I'm pretty sure one of the trucks even had the Nike swoosh, but like this one has like a swoosh under it. And it just says, in white letters, Sheila, in this incredible shade of purple.
Yeah. Damn.
And it's a military vehicle and it looks gay as fuck. And I love it.
And they also got a bunch of like converted dune buggies. Look like they're left over from Megaforce.
Mm-hmm. And all these things have like little rocket launchers on them, like the
30 caliber belt fed machine guns. 50 cal. Hilarious.
Definitely Mega Force.
I love it.
Big and vibes.
They get in this big chase to the city, and this is the part where they has the most like one line banter between Vasendik and Alex.
Oh man, this is great.
This going is actually over, like, the,
going like over like this? The in car video screen, which I guess somehow flips up every time Alex closes it.
It's a laptop. It's a laptop.
It's literally just a laptop. Yeah,
it is an IMAC. Yeah. This movie predicted IMAX, except that this one just flips open. It will not let you
close it
away.
It's like, oh no, I'm afraid of the dark. And then he just flips it.
That's definitely a managerial function they're working into the next release of that.
Put AI in it.
Okay, both of them, specifically Mick Jagger, is having the most fun.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Oh, blast.
It is amazing. He's just hanging out of this. Oh, go ahead.
This is the part where he has the most one-liners. It's just something about you couldn't catch the clap if you're in a whorehouse. It definitely sounds like it was written for delivery by Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yes.
Yeah.
You couldn't. I can't do it. I can't do a sports God damn. I just tried. I'm like, nope, not happening.
You couldn't catch the cop in a whole house.
I'm not going to try.
Thank you.
But there is
I like everyone thought I could when I was like 14.
There's a little funny bit at the end where like Alex is like, how am I doing? And like Vicente's like, pretty good, actually. Because he does really well. Like, he evades all these guys. There's a ton of wrecks. They lose, like, 20 Jeep Wranglers.
The whole point of this fucking chase scene is for, like, Vicendic to, like, earn his respect here.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
And it's really... Because the point we're making is, look at this shitty truck we've given him, which, like, handles, like, the potato. I'm just going to keep saying that word.
That's fine.
And he... The point being that Alex can drive anything and fuck you up.
Yeah, in the beginning of the movie, too, I was like, why do they make him a race car driver? Oh, because he drives all over the fucking city evading tanks.
Yeah, because this movie is 90% car chases.
And you have to remember, too, they're having this banter, and meanwhile, the Bonejackers are just hitting people left and right, like... Yeah.
They're flipping. They're like
flipping. They're dying.
Explanation why those buses and fucking limos look like that is so the one can do a barrel roll off of it.
It's
the whole reason they're in the movie, I'm sure.
Yes.
That's the only reason they're
just like, one of them dune buggies going to hit that.
So Furlong is like, you know, he's taking the truck, I guess, to New Jersey, which is closed off, which fair. And there's like the bridge is closed off. Like if he keeps going, he's going to ram into basically just like a concrete wall. And he's
there was this really good stunt beforehand though, where I think they're going through like another parking structure or something. And then there's a semi.
Yeah.
Right in front.
Trailer.
Yeah. And like, because Alex is, you know, too busy spitting off one-liners, he hits it. Like he ducks and, the truck hits it, and it just shears the
top of the
top half of this truck off. And I like that stunt.
No, that was cool. This stunt is
sets up the finale of the chase.
Yeah, yeah,
which is perfect. Like this actually makes kind of all right.
Yeah, because he ends up jumping into what I imagine is the Hudson, and he pulls up in his tank, and he's like, "If you drink any of that, I'm out of a job."
Yeah,
that's just fantastic.
Oh, then we get the best character in the movie.
Yes.
Right. So Alex washes up on like a pier or a dock somewhere, and we get
New Jersey.
This houseless person who's eating
river rat.
Yeah.
Oh man. Oh god.
And I believe he's either like the police commissioner or the mayor in The Wire.
Frankie Faison.
He's the mayor.
Yeah. He's from The Wire.
He's the mayor.
Shit.
Yeah.
Fucking love that. He's such a good actor too.
He's so good.
He owns this scene.
He does.
His monologue is
credited as that the Eagle Man.
It is not a good monologue, but it is very well delivered.
It's so good though, because of that. Yeah, like I'm sitting there and I'm hanging on every, and then he finishes it. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, it's Alex. So I mean, this is the fourth time I watched it, so I think maybe it's just a metaphor for how the American dream has failed everyone, and
also like don't give up.
They just quit.
Well, is he calling Alex the Eagle? Is Alex the Eagle in the metaphor?
No, I think. Like, very unclear. The whole country
is he just like laying it out for you?
It's unclear because he kind of lays it out and then he's like, you ever see that? And he's like, well, no. And he's like, that's right, because the eagle has too much self-respect to like just lay down and die, basically. And he's like, all right, I gotta go. My inspiration absorbed.
It's kind of suggested that Alex is thinking about like ending it all, and then he gets really like philosophical. The homeless guy says, he says, he asked me the age-old question. And it's really well delivered monologue.
Yeah, he's like,
doesn't make much sense.
If you're done, then you're done.
Yeah.
But it's weird. From the scene, we learned that there was a 10-year depression, which is why the country is why it's like that. And I'm just like, I think we would have been, we've done the 10-year depression. It wasn't that bad. Alex, but we didn't lose the trade war. So maybe, I don't know.
Alex asks him, how do you eat river rat? And he responds quite literally
with a recipe.
Yeah.
Yep. And you know they don't make them fresher than Jersey. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh goddamn! All right.
But we also learned from this scene that the homeless guy, the river rat person, knew that Alex was Alex. Knows that there's a $10 million reward out for Alex, and you start to learn that Alex is going to becoming this folk hero.
Yeah,
he's like evading the fuzz, and everybody in the homeless camps loves him,
which is wild.
They don't do enough with that.
They don't.
Yeah, they really should,
because they kind of suggest it there, and they really put it down on
it kind of feels
Julia's like, limo driver.
Because it kind of feels like it just kind of showed up, really. And
like they had a good idea in the midst of filming,
well, when did this happen? Because so far, like, he's in this homeless camp, like existing, trying to let you know, and like. There's no indication. They could have maybe the movie was like maybe a little 20 minutes longer. They could have like indicated that people know him, but they don't do any of that.
They just needed maybe literally a minute of it. Just a flash here, a flash there in the background.
Maybe a couple of people helping him in the camp, something like that.
Yeah.
Cause like those messages in Prince of Darkness
for the next scene, like Julie.
Oh, also, I think that there are some like extras in this movie that were just mannequins. I don't know if you guys noticed that. I think
that sounds like something we would do.
they don't have to pay them. So.
I certainly did not notice it.
Well, there was off screen. No, you're right. In the last scene, talking with the river rat, there's at least two other people that are just sitting off screen.
Yeah. Well, like there's a guy whose like legs are dangling from like this cot. Or like
all you see is his legs.
Yeah. And then in one of the chase scenes before, there's a dude sitting in like completely stock still at a table, and he looks exactly like a mannequin.
God. That would be me as an extra. I would just not know what to do.
Budget cuts, man.
For this next scene, we get Julie and her bodyguard Boone, who we kind of got a little driver bodyguard Boone. We got a little introduction to him before, but they go hunting for Alex because Julie has realized, I guess that really is Alex, since the Bone Jackers
Boone
are
is
after
so
him.
Cool.
Yeah,
he's
so cool, man.
Underutilized. Yeah. That guy needed
he gets
more,
out of the car.
More action.
And it's Skid Row with sax accompaniment. They're walking through all these refugees, homeless people, and he's got This looks really cool. He's got a Tech 9 in one hand. He's got a sheathed samurai sword in the other
hand.
But the reality is that that makes both of them completely ineffective. Because he has two hands to fire a submachine pistol and two hands to use early.
Also, did the Tech 9 like sword. Suck? Like
yeah, it's like, a terrible hand.
It's like, not famously. Great. Also, he's like wearing this really nice suit.
Yep. Super nice shark skin.
Like, he's too. Sharp as fuck.
Yeah, really. He looks incredible. I guess, looks like a linebacker. You know what? The Tech 9 at least look cool.
He's a big enough dude that I think we're supposed to believe that he could totally one hand one of those.
My theory for Boone is that maybe he wasn't like even in the script. I feel like he might have been up in the running to play Vicente. Like he could have totally played that role. I think.
Actually, since you mentioned it, Vicente was supposed to be played by Willem Dafoe.
Oh shit!
Wow. Oh geez! Wow! Okay!
Wow!
Another man who turned 25 and has looked 60 ever since.
Looks incredible.
I guess Alex was originally cast as Bruce Willis, but he wasn't available.
That would have been weird.
Yeah, this that would have been weird.
I'm trying to like imagine all of this now, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Defoe, all right, because I liked it. Anything he's in,
But we wouldn't have had this.
That's true.
Mick Jagger.
True.
That's very true.
Which is... It's delightful.
I think Boone was Vicendic. That would have been good. But I still
the actor's Grand L. Bush, and I think I remember him from some Star Trek episodes and a couple other things, some TV work, and he's been in a couple other movies. But really highly underutilized. I think he made a great character. But he's like her streetwise bodyguard. He's looking out for her, and she comes to this camp like where they just like are going to go looking for him amongst hundreds and hundreds of refugees. And they find him, of course. So
it's weird, too, because she says, I know
he
him.
He finds
I,
them.
Yeah, he finds them, but they like vaguely know where to go. Because before that, she says, I know him. I know where he goes, where he's upset. where he's upset is apparently a refugee camp in New Jersey.
Yeah,
it's like, look.
Or maybe it's Battery Park. I don't know.
He's being chased. Why would he go to a place that
the bar I was like getting served at on jazz night when I was like 15 doesn't exist anymore. I'm not going back there.
Just hang out the abandoned building. Yeah.
Yeah. Come on, man. Like
rat.
Move around. They keep coming back to the same spot and finding you.
So they decide to join up. And this is also where we see that there's a massive $10 million reward out for Alex. It's in one of the vid screens that they see across the river. Yeah.
So everyone knows what he looks like at this point.
Yeah.
All of the city knows him by now.
Yeah. And this is also where we find out, I think, is this the scene where Boone starts talking? I don't think it's later, actually. But
it's later. He's, again, underutilized because we only get, like, his character.
Well, all this is he's trying to take him to a boat, right?
Yeah, well, that's the end of it.
Trying to set that up.
At this point, Julie says, I know a guy, and this is like a street samurai edge runner kind of dude that she knows who she's going to consult with to see about getting Alex out of here. And they're going to meet him at a pretty fucking cool club called Industrial Revolution.
Yeah.
It's pretty authentic.
I liked it.
Yeah. It looks like 1991 though. Like, it should have looked like the 70s really. In terms of style. Like, I mean, that's what
there was totally a club in Cleveland that looked like that.
Yeah.
There was a club in Chicago.
Think people would still be having, would still have had like 1990s hairstyles and clothes.
And there's actually a lot they cut from. I thought it was,
I don't know, man.
Yeah. I was going to say.
I'm on Instagram.
Well, today that flies. In 2008 or 2009.
Like, sure.
I
was shaving my head and going to school.
That was exactly when synthwave was starting to kick back up. So maybe they made it look like the 80s.
My entire fashion sense stopped in 1997.
It does look very much like a tech noir built large. But being someone who frequented clubs in the 1990s, mid-1990s, late 1990s, it looked pretty authentic for an industrial club in the future. There's a bunch of stuff they cut out of it. Apparently, there's one whole scene here where they're doing like public executions because in this future, people want to have their heads cut off because then they can't be bone jacked. It's kind of like a weird.
Oh, is that the thing like suicide service?
Yeah. And apparently,
I was just thinking too. It's not the club from Strange Days, but you know what? That comes pretty close.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, there's also a part where she's sitting down with. Julia is sitting down with, I forget his name, but the guy that they're meeting. And
Morgan. His name's Morgan. I don't know if that's a nod to Morgan Blackhand or not, but he's a pretty cool dude. He's an operator.
Yeah. And Like, you don't really get to hear the whole conversation that they have.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, no. It really doesn't matter.
Because
Alex gets
it
one
seems
drink
like a lot of it got cut.
From a BDSM bartender that just fucks him up.
Yeah, it's this like guy has
future
a drink in his hand.
He like future roofies him, but like doesn't black out. He just gets like, fuck
really
it.
Fucked up. Yeah.
Yeah. The liquor was
and this is another cool part. He talks to a live streamer from the club.
Yes,
exists now. Dude.
With a camcorder with a mini disc in it.
Yeah. It's great. And then they're like, we need to upload to the network. And then they boom.
When they find out who he is, because he's drunk as shit.
And this is a this, like bit. I actually really like this a lot.
And this actress is actually what's her name? Jerry Hall, Mick Jagger's longtime partner. She got this part.
Oh shit! Okay,
all right.
She kind of owns it. And she does a great job.
She does.
I don't really understand how this works because they like start live streaming, but it takes over like all the TV.
She's streaming to her like channel. She's like prefiguring influencers here. This is great.
Yeah, but then
then she's like has a line to the network, so she's able to put the feed up. So that because he's a wanted man and they're it's gonna go through,
but it cuts into this feed that's like on the next
that's
what's, to Julia.
That's what it is. Morgan. It's a live feed.
Imagine it's a live feed to the network.
Imagine
that's
the subscribers.
I thought that was a funny payoff because he's all just like fucked up on camera, just being like, "Yeah, I don't know. Tell this guy to go fuck himself."
Yeah, that's the part. That's the part where he goes, "I got one message for you. Fuck you, asshole."
And they keep keep cutting to Mick Jagger, who's playing Q-Bert or whatever.
Yeah, he's like, retro video game.
Yeah, yeah. And I love that little detail, but it also kind of just shows this guy doesn't really have a life outside of his job.
No, he's literally just playing Q-Bert, and then he gets over, and he's like, "Ugh."
And that makes sense. That checks out for his character, you know.
So then again, Morgan rushes in.
I like that. I like that little like sad boy detail of his life, really.
For sure.
But then he gets like a little message telling him that Alex Furlong has been picked up because he's on camera.
Switches to that feed. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he drinks the drink that makes him forget Mojo Nixon's advice.
Morgan realizes that this is happening, and he like jumps in with these really cool blinder sunglasses and another flashbang grenade. But unfortunately, again, no one else knows there's going to be a flashbang.
Oh. And I love like going back to the streamer for a second. I love, he's like, everyone wants my body. She's like, the self-absorbed type.
Yeah. The writing's good here.
What it was is like, everyone's after me. It's like, why is everyone after you? It's like, they want my body.
Yeah. And then they figure out who he is and they start broadcasting.
Yeah.
It's just really good. Really prefigures the influencer.
It really does.
Plague.
So they get back to Morgan's house, and it looks like a set from a Nickelodeon show. Like, it's kind of weird. It's an art.
It's
place,
weird looking.
I guess.
It's weird.
And he gives a little civics economics lesson.
There's this weird plaster limbs in the background.
Yeah, like it's feet and hands and shit. But they're like huge.
He's going on like, there's people at the top, there's people at the bottom, there's nobody in between. And I'm like, 2009. Yeah. Okay.
We're very cool.
And then we get a little bit of backstory on like, well, we don't really know why Julia knows this guy. Like,
doesn't serve the story really.
Yeah. He just says that, they know each other for a couple years.
Yeah.
Oh, and this is where that water bottle sound was. It was just like the worst AMSR ever.
Don't know what you're talking about.
It was just like sloshing. It was like,
now that you mention it. Yeah. That was
it was like they mic'd his water bottle because he's like picking it up and drinking it, and it had like one like little bit of an ice cube left in it because there's something dinging in there.
All right, I know I'm gonna go back and like hear it and feel like an asshole, but like if you want the coin ops version of this film, go to the Discord.
I'm gonna post that in the Discord.
Yeah, because I'm like, I don't
subliminal,
know what you're talking about.
It'll be in subliminal messaging so that you can experience the hallucinatory version of this movie that I saw.
But Morgan
like
tells her
you don't even need mushrooms. This shit's just abstract as fuck. It's just
Morgan tells her it's just too much heat. It's just too much heat. So they decide they have to call McCandless, who is the head of the McCandless Corporation, Julie's boss, and maybe he can like swing something because of course he's going to be benevolent, right?
Yeah, he's Anthony Hopkins. He's wonderful and kind.
That's Sir Anthony to you.
excuse me. I'm sorry. I don't recognize titles or
no gods, no masters. I'm with you. Yeah.
Well, he's at a big old desk.
But then also we get this like weird like love interest scene where he kind of makes a move on her and she's like, I'm older now. And
even
you know,
though she looks exactly the same.
True. Yeah. But also it's kind of like, I mean, maybe that's like her nice way of saying, you know, don't.
Yeah.
Stop. Yeah. And yeah. Don't.
This is weird for me.
Yeah. You've been dead.
Yeah.
I've moved on. I'm married to my job.
If this movie was just a smidge smarter, it wouldn't have been like the classic, like, you know, gets the girl at the end.
Yeah,
it,
I think it's
well,
not.
Well, I mean, yeah, but at the same time, they're really not, like, it doesn't really work out.
Yeah. True.
You know what I mean? Well, I mean, yeah, he gets to, like, bang her. That's the most 1992 way I could say that.
From 92, right?
Yeah. God. I mean, but... You know, I think this movie has... I'm just really upset by that. I'm sorry. I think this movie is kind of a bit of a metaphor for... Not to get into the themes already, but, like, I think it's a bit of a metaphor for just growing up, you know? Like,
sure.
And I think you're looking too much into it.
Well, no, maybe. I think anything you know,
you find
get out of it based on your experience. What you
it
put
could
into
be
it.
There's not, like, an immaturity to him, like you know, missing
because
you know he just wakes up and the world is terrible. And
they pull this thread a little bit because you know he's that next they decide that McCandless helps him. He says, "There's a boat here. Come there and we'll get you out of there, or whatever." But she's saying like, "Oh, I can't go with you. Like, come on. What if I showed up to you the night before the race and said like, you know, what if our situation was reversed?" And he understands it. So yeah, there's some growing. There is some learning there.
Yeah,
I mean, like
yeah.
Don't I get feel more like most boom. People maybe would have known that, but
maybe I don't know. I don't know. It's a strange thing considering how the movie plays out and how they get back together at the end. And
It feels like a I don't know, like a softened Verhoeven film a little bit.
Kind
of.
Yeah.
Well, I think that they went back to try and do more of that to it and to add like. But again, there's like it. At the end of the day, there's so many cooks between the editing and the rewrites and the problems they're having.
Get lost.
Yeah. I'm amazed that they even had these many threads to put in it that were somewhat coherent. Yeah. So
yeah, that's fair.
I'm always impressed by a film that can be like kind of resurrected in the edit and et cetera. But this one actually went like it had what you said 40% of the movie was reshot. It's fucking batshit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
And it's regardless of everything we're saying about this weird relationship, it is an entertaining film. Like it has no right to be considering what we know now, what it went through to make.
Yeah.
But
just in the watch, it's a hoot. I don't understand it.
Like, it's entertaining.
It keeps working. It keeps like the cheesy line is delivered in a certain way. It's not quite like, you know, Matt Berry delivery, but definitely Mick Jagger is making some choices.
Well, I mean, speaking of, too.
It's over the top, and it knows it's over the top.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's really grounded.
The next thing that we move to, we have Amanda Plummer's next big role.
This is the best.
Where, I guess, Michelette's goons have captured...
This doesn't... I don't know why she's there. She doesn't need to be there. She doesn't need to be in the scene. This scene doesn't need to happen.
This doesn't make any sense at all. Like it
and I fucking love it.
But I love it.
Fucking love it.
But I guess Michelette has captured the nun from... He's retracing Alex's steps, and they've got the nun there trying to interrogate her, and he does a really brutal slap, just like gives her like a full.
Yeah, this movie has some really good slaps in it.
Yeah,
I was like, "Fuck this guy!" Ouch. I forgot how this ended. Yeah. I forgot the scene even happened. And they're like,
he backhands a nun, then she proceeds to kick his testicles into.
Oh no! Hold up! She's like, Jesus said to turn the other cheek, and then she. Fucking decks him in the nuts perfectly and says, but he never had to put up with assholes like you.
And Michelette passes out.
You know, there are literally.
You know the old cartoons? You know, the old, like, fucking back in the day kind of Tom and Jerry era cartoons where they'd, like, go to the festival and there would be, like, the hit the thing and the thing will ding the bell? That's what I imagine his nuts do.
Definitely rings. Like,
went up and hit him in the esophagus and dinged back down and he just passed out.
Eyes roll up and scene.
Yeah. Yep.
I think they had to let her go. I think if you could do that, you get to go.
You see the guards, too, like, kind of like.
They were like,
it surprises everybody in the room.
it was kind of great.
You know, there are literally two female characters in this movie. I realize at this point.
And yeah.
I mean, who knows what happens to Amanda Plummer? I hope she's not dead. I hope she's...
I elect to... My headcanon is like, oh, come on. Yeah. She's made it this far as a nun in this
fucking... This is true.
She's fine.
Yep. Okay.
She's clearly not to be fucked with. It's like...
Yeah, she's pretty great. It was the only reason I was just upset that we just don't get more of her, you know?
I seriously would have loved her to have been like a third of this film.
I think her character and Boone are the two I felt were like the... Like, her wasn't as wasted as Boone.
Yeah.
But like her presence there is appreciated just for how little we get. Boone is a different story, but we'll get to that.
Yeah,
which is, you know, the next scene we're down at the docks. We're going there to meet the boat, so Alex can make his escape. Yeah. We have that little real talk in the car where he's like, come with me. And she's like, no. Swipe left. And Boone and Alex have a little talk where they're like, you know, walking down in the boat. And that's where we find out that, you know, you're a folk hero now. Keep making my grandma happy. And of course, the boat's a trap.
I have mixed feelings about this. Because he's like awesome, but it's like, why now?
Yeah. Yeah, like his character suddenly has like agency all of a sudden, and we get like they're trying to like, I guess,
rush his exposition in the sense that like he has a grandmother, he's become a folk hero, his grandmother really likes
Alex
him.
Has become a folk hero.
Alex has become a folk hero, and makes his grandmother happy, which makes him happy. And you should just keep being cool and keep making my grandmother happy. And this is basically him saying, "Hey, I'm going to die later."
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. All of this is pretty much like red shirt on Star Trek shit.
Yeah. Which sucks because Boone's a badass.
Yeah.
Yeah, he totally is.
Oh, man.
With the fucking sword, the Tech Nine, the suit.
Yeah. Anyways, the another explosion.
Yep. The boat explodes.
The boat really explodes.
Really?
It was like, oh, okay, because like the back, like the
you could tell
the back part of it explodes, but then a much, much larger pyro gets set off. Yeah. And it's like, oh, Jesus Christ, they felt that.
Yeah,
kaboom. No eyebrows for anybody the rest of that day.
No.
And
the way it's shot, they look pretty close.
We find out Vesendik has trapped him there, supposedly, I mean, obviously sent by McCandless, we know, but then also the scavs from earlier who hijacked the convoy in the first place, which we find out are working for Michelet, then attack Vesendik's people. So it's a big chase, big firefight between the three different groups. Pretty cool. Having a lot of
fun. It's cool. It goes on for a long time.
It's great.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
There's a moment where there's a little melee where Emilio Estevez has to hit this guy, and like it's like it's not really power. He's just like it's the classic 80s 90s big dude syndrome. But he also has a helmet on, so he like donks him in the helmet, and the guy turns around, throws him, and then
This is where I kind of realized where it's dumb. Like, oh, they're just wearing like power armor because he fucking fucking clocks him and it does nothing.
Yeah,
I just thought it was a really good helmet. Yeah. He's just a tall dude.
That's true. Yeah,
yeah.
But before any of that happens, so this is where Boone gets punked. They get ambushed by some guys. Boone shows a lot of forethought and has Alex hold these guys down while he goes around the back, nails three guys in the back, and he's just kind of like
What does Alex say? He's like, "We're pinned down," and something like that. And then,
what do you mean, white man?
Yeah.
Then he just like, flanks him and looks awesome doing it. And
just the way that he draws his sword. Oh man.
Well, it got shot.
Gets shot in the left, in the right breast. But then, like, he's still okay enough to pull his sword and kill this guy. But then, like, not okay enough to continue fighting or to go on. He just sacrifices himself. It's really cheap.
It's
cheap death. It's upsetting because
he does the lay on the grenade thing.
Literally. It sucks because he's so cool. I would have wanted a series about Boone.
How did you get this gig?
How did you get this gig? You're better than this.
Oh man, but
he dies.
This is where you're gonna die.
Weird fight with the tall bone jacker that ends with Alex like using his environment to beat the big guy. It's kind of neat.
For some reason, I like the
setup for that
helmet. Yeah. I don't know why.
Because there's like all these dangling wires.
Because he figures if he puts the helmet on, nobody can ding him in the head with a pipe.
Basically, yeah.
Valid.
Then he gets why did he not put the rest of the armor on? Well, because he's a tiny dude. It would look really goofy.
Yeah. The helmet's a stretch, too, because these things are like...
It already looks goofy.
Maybe. Oh, no. He was making fun of Mick Jagger at the beginning of the movie.
He meets Mick in the next scene. They both have helmets on. And they have like a bonding moment where
he
can kill Mick, doesn't kill Mick.
Yeah, yeah.
he finds out that Mac is basically behind everything.
Yeah.
He
gives him the name, and then
it's like once he's like, I can't tell you that, and then he's like, come on, and he goes, okay.
Yeah, because he's
kind of love it
because a couple of these other guys from the
Bonejackers.
Not the Bonejackers,
the Scavs.
The Scavs show up, and so Alex manages to kind of save Mick from getting gacked.
He saves his life.
Yeah,
and that's why he's like, "I saved your life. You owe me more than that."
Yeah.
So that's why he's all right. Betrays his secrets, because you can see how his mind is working. He's contracted this job. He really doesn't want to like this guy, but he likes this guy. And at the end of the day, he's like, you did something for me, so I'm going to give you a little something. And then he even goes down to quantify it even more. He's like, I don't want you to think that I hold your life cheaply, so I'm going to give you a 5-minute head start. One Mississippi. Two Mississippi. Good. It's so good.
It's awesome.
It's really great. So much like there's a person who's never pronounced Mississippi before and has to pronounce Mississippi.
I'll tell you, their scenes together are great.
Bravo to the voice coach.
Yeah. Uh-huh. He's so over-enunciating so many things, too, which is great, because he has that giant Mick Jagger mouth.
Yes. Yeah.
And he really does sing a lot of his lines.
He's a cartoon. He's kind of like this proto Matt Berry kind of thing going on with
kind
his
of the most interesting
line
character.
Delivery.
Yeah. I love him. He's great. Yeah. He's hammy, but in a really good way.
He's trying.
Yeah.
He's trying really hard to do this. It's clear.
Yeah.
So he lets Alex run for a little bit, gives him his 5-minute head start, and and Alex runs out in the street, and there's a tank chasing him again, and he thinks he's caught, but actually Rene Russo
clip on it.
Yep.
Stole the tank from Vicendic. So, kudos to her.
So they're in the red Cadillac tank.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Oh, I love it. It looks incredible.
Yes.
And then it's just batshit crazy. I think doesn't he take her hostage?
Taking her hostage.
Yeah, they call Michelette. He pretends to take her hostage and get to the building.
Another Michelette fun little detail about the tank. it doesn't have any viewports. It's kind of like the same thing as the cars and Daybreakers. But it's like thermal cams too.
It's dope.
It's really cool. Yeah.
They do a lot of incidental little things that they don't reference, that are cool.
Yeah.
It's kind of okay, I have to call this out. The video calls. They have this little animation that brings the screen up.
Yeah.
And it's very old GeoCities. It looks worse than Until the End of the World, which came out a few years before this.
Yeah.
It really does.
Mm-hmm.
It's really weird. It was like one of the few things that kind of took me out of the movie for a moment. Cause
that movie spoiled us.
That's ruined me.
Yeah.
The full version ruined me. Yeah. I'm like, shit.
You got the technology can't be because the technology looks so real in Before the End of the World.
Yeah.
Lived in and realistic.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious.
This is close though. This definitely tips its hat.
Yeah.
It's trying.
It definitely looks very lived. It's really well designed in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I thought so. There was nothing about this movie that just pissed me off. It was well, I know what I'm getting here. And then, when I get to the end of it, I was fine.
Yeah. There's something about the tone that feels really uncommon for a cyberpunk movie.
It's light.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah.
I don't know how to describe it either.
There aren't very many scenes during the dark, I think.
We get back
to for me, those are just, it's like mud. What am I seeing? Okay. I trust that this is Mick Jagger's head.
And actually, there was a problem between the set designer and the director. The set designer came from a theater background, but again, he was an in-house guy, and the sets were hard to light.
Yeah.
And the director couldn't film them well. So again, all this stuff came through.
Interesting. Yeah.
Hmm.
That's an interesting example of how sometimes that doesn't work. Because I've seen plenty of films where the set designer has theater background and they look fucking majestic.
Yeah.
Oh, what was that one? The thief, the cook, his lover, her wife.
His wife and
her lover. It's a stunning film. I can't recommend it enough. It's cannibalism. It's great. Anyhow, moving on.
We get back to the McCandless building. They roll up with the tank and they do this hostage ploy to get up to see Michelette, who's kind of running the show now. And we find out that McCandless is dead. He's on ice in the next room, and they show a picture of it, but it's supposed to be again, Anthony Hopkins looks a lot more like Joe Pesci. Very puffy.
Yeah, it's basically a Ubik casket.
It's here. A really bad mannequin of this man.
Yeah.
Bad. Why not Tussauds wax museum reject?
Yeah. It doesn't look like. Just,
it does not.
Oh, did we talk about how, like, when they talked to him at the beginning, he was just this, like, holographic fucking.
Because they're in his brain. We learned by the end that they were just in the room, so he made it look like a cathedral with him dressed as like Sith Lord monk.
Black monk robes.
Mm-hmm. You can't see his face, but then he's like,
"Oh, that was also."
I don't just want anybody. Well, anybody. I want this body.
And it's, that's where we learn there's a time frame for the people.
But you don't know who it is.
The switchboard.
Yeah, like we know now.
36 hours, or else you get deleted.
Yeah. It burns out. Like the system can't hold. You know, okay, so I was talking about this with you guys about like scientists managed to map out like at least like a little, like a centimeter of the human brain into data. Mm-hmm. And it's like zettabytes. It's like an absurd amount of data. You need like a server the size of a building to like.
Yeah. Well, this plot element, like right away, kind of brought me back to Gibson's villain in Count Zero, where it's like that rich guy and he has to live in these vats because his brain needs to be like kept alive. And it's like the longer he lives, the more brain functions he's losing, but the bigger the vats need to get. So it's the same sort of thing. It's like the thing is going to kill him, and he's using all his money in the world to try and maintain.
It's like prolonging his death, because like eventually they said it's like it just burns out because you have a human mind in a computer, which is like impossible.
Yeah, and apparently McCandless, you know, died because of a Type 3 virus. Okay, sure, fine, we'll go with it.
Isn't that the one that's going around?
Yeah, like how many viruses are we up to now?
Are we on like the 7th variant?
Yeah.
But here Michelet reveals that he has no intention of, you know, providing McCandless this body, because Michelet wants to take over the goddamn company. Yeah, and he's like, I'll just let you guys go.
And this is what I was talking about. Like, this is kind of like some clunkily delivered exposition, because Michelet doesn't have to tell them shit, really. Right. He doesn't have to tell them what his plan is or anything.
Yeah.
So,
he's such a smug fuck. Of course he does.
Like he doesn't have to, because as soon as they get back in the elevator, like, oh, that was easy. He's like, all right, when they get to the ground floor, kill him.
Yeah.
And
he fires her, and then she slaps him like a good
another great slap.
Yeah.
Wind up slap.
Yeah. And then the little interaction between him, like Alex just kind of leans in and it looks like he's going to say something.
And he just
laughs.
Yeah.
I actually like that.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool.
It was good.
Yeah.
I think it's hilarious because they're on the elevator down, and Alex is just like, "This is too easy."
Yeah,
and I'm like, "Way to speak the audience's thoughts."
That's exactly sitting in the theater. I was thinking exactly. I think there was like a laugh. Everybody chuckled. Like, yeah, of course.
It's kind of like a nice moment of self awareness that makes me like tolerate the movie more, kind of in a way. Yeah. Like, I like it. It's entertaining. It's a lot of fun. But it just kind of makes it. It's like, you know what? Fuck it.
Let's go. I thought it was fine.
They get to the bottom of the elevator. The security contingent is there to stop them. They all like cock their guns. But then we see that Vasendek is behind them with his bone jactors, and he kills them. It's a big firefight. Elevator goes back up.
He basically plays the part of the Hell's Angels at Altamont.
I thought the scene was good, because we had the tension of them freaking out, like, is there a way to like control the elevator, because they know what's waiting for them when they get down there, right? And they're like, is there any way to control this, what's happening? He's like, no. They're like, fuck, what are we gonna do? Because he pulls his gun and he checks the ammo, he's like, one shot left,
Deus Ex Mick.
You know, the bone jackers show up and just murk all of these security guards,
and
it's like a weird kind of ACAB moment.
There's a bunch more
exposition from Vasendek saying, you know, that they're going up to the spiritual switchboard.
Because then the elevator closes and just starts going up automatically, like
up to the jack.
Well, they wanted to go to the 100th floor so they could get to a fire escape module.
But it keeps going to the 200th floor.
I'm sitting there like, 100 floors, that's a lot. And then it just keeps going, and I'm like, wow.
I understand that, like, they needed to you know, well, like, this is the fucking fastest elevator in the world. It's like in free fall when it goes down, and it's even faster as it ascends.
So but the worst part about it, too,
dude,
is when
it's
they,
like the elevator in college.
When they get to the top of the
what
elevator,
are you talking about?
there is no elevator. They just appear in the middle of a room. That's the worst part of this at the end. Here's like they don't step out of anything. They just, the elevator gets up there, and they
the way it is,
it's
like the elevator's
a room.
Yeah, because like the elevator is a glass tube, but like there is no real elevator. Like there's no like wind. There's nothing pulling the elevator. It just goes up. Into this middle of the room, and you're in this glass canister, and it just opens.
It's a vertical hyperloop that apparently works.
Sure, why not?
It's a big old vacuum tube.
Yeah.
So they're in the jack at the top of the building, and they walk through like one of these alien, you know, metal sphincter
it's an
camera
aperture.
I love them.
They did a good
those
job.
Are my favorite.
It was really cool. It was...
They're real. They're not CGI. They built them.
Yes,
and I love this movie.
And then they immediately get Lawnmower Man by Hannibal Lecter.
Yes. Amazing.
It's a very, very 2001 sequence here where they kind of go through his mind, and
it starts with an eye, and then it like stretches out into like a hyperspace thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know it if you've ever seen the Beyond the Mind's Eye videotapes.
Anthony Hopkins has got like a synth voice, a synth filter over his voice.
Yeah,
he's smoking a cigar.
He says, "Welcome to my mind."
And his mind's a fucking desert.
His mind is like, his mind is like a desert, but then it like conjures a cathedral that in no way could ever be in, like, because it looks like Arizona or something.
And this scene, by the way, is vaporwave as fuck.
With a lot of video clip art from the nights. And this actually, the director wanted to do like a lot of practical type visual effects on this, but they were like, no, this is the 90s. We want all video art.
Honestly, it doesn't look bad. I've seen
really
movies
doesn't.
That came out around the same time that had
the
far worse computer generated
stuff.
Frankly, I think this part's fine. This is not the bit I have a problem with.
Yeah, things like disappear and reappear with this cool little wavy effect.
Yeah,
time is passing, shadows move. It's like,
yeah,
he explains to Julia, like, he's like, wait, how are you in, you know, Greece or fucking Sydney or whatever? And he just like turns in, he just like this screen comes around him. And then as the camera pans around, the screen disappears and he appears behind them.
It's very dreamlike because you're in someone's mind.
It's actually good.
Yeah, well, I thought it was really cool.
I was like, this isn't bad. It's definitely a product of its time, but it's good.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's tasteful. He does like the big reveal. He's like, I'll let you guys go. I've been a horrible person. No problem. Just.
And this is the moment I want to believe him because it's Anthony Hopkins. He's very charming. I'm like, thank God. Well, not an evil CEO.
There's a part of his speech. Like, he was saying, this was all a big misunderstanding because, you know, Alex was supposed to show
brain dead.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You
know,
and
which makes all the difference, I guess.
But he explains, you know, he does all this, and like I believe this part. You know, he says it's because he's in love with Julia, he's like,
of course,
he could never, you know, be what she wants, and then he finds out that he's dying. But then he delivers this part where he's like, if there was only some way that I could become this man that she loves, that she always talks about. If there was only some way that I could physically, bitch,
it's
your
weird.
Company fucking does, like, that's what you
I
do.
I know, right?
That is your business.
Spiritual, you know? Switchboard is their highest marketing product, right?
Oh my God. Like, guys,
what?
This is literally the plot of that Kitty Cat Detective Service I was telling you about off mic.
What?
What?
I want to be the man. I can't be the man.
Right.
So here, let me get you
oh my God. Game is from so they can find it.
That game.
I'll reference it at the end.
So,
okay.
Sorry, this is the biggest problem I have, I think, with the design of the movie is then this, like, this computer interface that looks like a reject prop from Flash Gordon or
I love it. I
Superman
it so
2 or something, but it's like a
it looks
like
so bad.
A reflective jack.
It's another jack. It's a jack inside of a jack.
Listener, imagine this. What if fuck orbs? Let's do this. You know what I mean? You like how in like a fucking Total Recall, you had the thing with the alien hand, and you had to stick your hand into it and it would turn on the whole, like, you know, something like that. No, the guy just like, okay, so we're going to have like different size jacks in this movie.
Yeah, so you just have like two balls that you put your hand on. And
because it's in the name of the film, man. Yeah. You know, like, but it's fine because it works. It's like, a, you know, whatever.
He does this thing where he's like, okay, I want you to input this code and all my money will be yours. And it turns out it was all bullshit. He's just stalling.
Oh, yeah. He's like, that would make sense.
You know, that's what I was going to say is maybe that's why he delivers that bullshit about, there was only some way, you know, like,
He
says, you know, this is my personal ID code. If you put it in, you hit delete, I will be deleted.
And he's really selling it right up until the code doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's pretty good until, but right away, Alex is like, nah, this is bullshit. And that's when the ruse kind of falls apart.
Yeah, yeah, he talks to Vasendic via, you know, Zoom call, but at the end he's like, I'm calling everything off. But then he says something like protocol 612,
like 217 or some shit.
And then,
so it basically, you know, the order is ostensibly disregard everything I just said and get your ass up here.
Yeah,
yeah.
Then you realize, like, you know, this holo chamber kind of melts away, and there's some technicians there, and they got like the machine. And this is the part that's kind of like, okay, if he is not a physical being, if he is a computer program, why does he need to lay hands on the jack testicles?
Oh, boy.
Because he has to put his, you know,
falls apart.
He has to put his meaty flesh hands on the dongles.
Yeah.
And but then so does Anthony Hopkins, who does not have flesh.
And then, like, the part
they had every opportunity to play Bon Jovi's Lay Your Hands on Me.
That's
and
what
then so they're holding him down there. His hands are locked to these like spheroids. And then the worst part, like it's this crystal peripheral that kind of opens up on top.
It's like, okay, like, so the alien artifact opens
solenite, like vibrations, lightning comes out.
Mars has water.
And then they have a mind battle.
There's
electricity sparking from this crystal, and then
listen, Emilio Estevez's screams here are the least. It's
I love how all of his memories. I get that, you know, it must have been budget constraints, but all of his memories are everything that we've seen in this movie. It's,
right?
It's just from that,
and they're delivered in like Phantom Zone, like
squares
screams
at his head,
really big. Everything gets all Lucifer Rising meets 2001 Space Odyssey. Like you're saying.
And it's like, I guess it's supposed to imply that his memories are being deleted because they kind of like fizzle out in a way. And this is the CGI that does not look good.
This whole bit is it feels like really.
You're not
rushed.
Allowed to say it doesn't look good. Listen, everything didn't look good to you.
Listen, the budget.
Everything budget looked like shitty version.
They
literally liked everything up to this.
On the previous 2001 sequence where they were going into his mind and then.
Yeah, and the whole conversation. Mind, that shit was great.
Yeah, the conversation's incredible.
This looks like garbage. Ran out. Ran out of
money. He like doesn't move his face. If he had done like a slow like, you know, like where he's slowly opening his mouth, that would have been great.
Yeah, however, I did really like the little bits where they show kind of like,
I want to throw like a ping pong ball in his mouth. Yeah. You know? Cause it's just, it's like not moving.
I did really like, you know, they kind of have these little shots of Alex's face and then it's kind of being supplanted and it's very seamless by, Anthony Hopkins' face.
There's some cool things.
That was cool.
That was neat.
Mm-hmm. That was neat.
I'm always trying to look for the best in people.
But then
something happens.
Michelet comes in the hallway because he was still at large. Michelet had not yet been caught. There was still like a power struggle in the building. They were mopping up his forces. He comes up there to the jack. He sees what's going on. Rene Russo.
He looks like he's been like worked over with bats. Like he was shit. And I'm like, I remember watching this and I'm like, what the fuck did they do to you? Because we didn't see it. We had no idea.
Yeah. It implied that there's like a fight going on between their forces. And then
I guess, but like,
well, part of it.
Julia,
where did he go though?
Yeah, where did he go? The last time I saw him, he was in his office.
He was fighting out his forces, you know?
Sure,
I guess so.
Everybody's taking that elevator up?
Floor by floor, you know?
Anyhow, I guess that's like one dude.
Julia takes the shit out of him.
Hold on. Zero, you just reminded me because when the Bone Jackers clear the lobby, they're like, okay, we're going to go floor by floor, clear it. And I'm thinking to myself, 200 floors.
280, something like that.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, Julia takes this opportunity to Julia takes this chance to pull a strap off of one of the guards and shoots the machine. And
she shoots the Xeno crystal in the center of it. Yeah. And Anthony Hopkins just disintegrates.
Mm-hmm.
Estevez is launched backwards and confusion ensues.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knows what's about to happen next.
Because he gets up and they're looking at him like, because he's kind of dead-eyed, but not really. Yeah, and they're like, who are you? Did it work?
Well, Michelet, they're trying to determine, and the techs just can't tell because...
Well, Michelet's like, fuck it, he's dead, I win, haha, I own everything now, woohoo, it's me, guys, it's me. And then Emilio Estevez wakes up.
He's like, hang on, wait a minute.
Oh, fuck.
Tuck, tuck now.
Except that Emilio Estevez cannot do a British accent.
He can't do an Anthony Hopkins accent. No.
He gets the cadence, though.
I mean, I guess that's the question.
He gets the cadence. He's not trying to do an impression, which is...
He starts using some, Reader's Digest words towards the end of this to make himself sound a little smarter.
Yeah.
Again, it's extra funny when you know Anthony Hopkins writes orchestras for fun. You know what I mean?
Look, he was in that endless one. He was in that fucking Thor movie having a blast.
He's this huge very artful intellectual, in music and classical music and all these things that he enjoys.
Dude, he was in a Transformers movie.
And he appears in a fucking Transformers movie, which
and he was having a blast.
And I respect it. Yeah, exactly. It's a great...
So he wakes up, he says, I'm a candleless. And then they say, fingerprints won't work, a voice print ID won't work, a retinal scan won't work. And it's the only thing that it could possibly be was if he knows his own personal code. So
I love this so much.
So stupid. I love. Yeah, it's great.
It breaks right through stupid.
Jagger's got a gun on him.
It doesn't even make any sense either.
Until later. It does pay off. It pays off brilliantly.
It still does not make sense. We'll get to it.
But, he's what's the number? Let's hear it. What's your social?
And then Alex puts his hands to his forehead he's
trying to summon it.
Just the last four, right? Just those?
Yeah.
Right.
And then...
he starts calling him off and Vicente's correct. And then Mitch...
No.
He's six. And he's proceed.
Yeah.
And he's like, what? Is that his ID number? Is six?
Because he doesn't fucking know.
And not only is it nine. And you do see the ID it's number five. For just a second.
Two.
And it does start with 69, which is nice.
Nice.
Then he just starts rattling off a bunch of different
presumably he could have memorized the number. So it's kind of clear what's happening, but they are confused. He starts saying some shitty stuff to her, you'll be dressed more appropriately and smile on the way.
He's basically like, all right, I'm gonna be a dick. And then they just murk what's his name.
Great. It in his back, even as he's running away.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because they're like, all right, well, fuck you. And
he's like, goddamn you.
So they think he's
McCandless.
Yeah.
They think he's McCandless for some reason, who drives a 29 Rolls Royce.
Right.
Amazing. Weird. I lost my shit.
Stunning.
Yeah.
Incredible.
That's when I when you talk about vintage automobiles, I'm like, that's one.
Yeah, that's one I would totally drive in post-apocalyptic 2009.
That's great.
The driver's there, and he's like, I think I'll drive today, Jeeves or whatever. So he gets in the car with Renee, so who's admittedly dressed, quite nicely. Mm-hmm. And they take off, drive it, and then they get stopped by Waffen Jager in the middle of the road with his tank battalion. They're just like... Stop it, Rolls Royce.
This is my favorite.
He walks up to the window. He's dressed like a Mongol horseman. And, he says, I knew you'd slip up if I keep watching you. And it's revealed that that he is not McCandless. And Rene Russo is extremely surprised by this. And, says, so
and he's like, you're going to have to do a better job.
Yeah, because coach can't drive. Yeah.
And then he gets my favorite line. He's like, but the number. And he goes, I lied.
It's so good. It's so
he
good.
Wasn't even
he
close.
Sings it. It's beautiful. He wasn't even close.
It's
my favorite moment of the movie.
Like,
really, and then they start playing the Scorpions, which I thought was not very appropriate for the end of it. Again,
but the song does kick, even in 144p.
Part of the way that they wanted to sell this movie was by having like a hip rock and roll track to end it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but it's very weird. There's like, there's like Jesus Jones. There's Ministry's Thieves.
Jesus and Mary.
What else? There's Jesus and Mary Chain with Sugar Eleven. Ring.
Yeah.
Yeah. 11, who I forgot about until I was looking up the soundtrack to this, and I was like,
but that ending doesn't make sense, because it's like, why the act, you know? Like,
well, because
he only has to act for so long.
Yeah.
Well, like, he needs to act because now he has more money than God. He's technically the CEO of this gigantic mega corporation, and
which is the city,
which is basically the city, and he just has to pretend to be a British man to maintain it all, because everyone thinks he's...
Well, here's the thing.
This is literally the happiest possible cyberpunk ending.
Yes. Here's my issue with it, though, because, listen, Alex knows he's bullshitting. Vasendek knows he's bullshitting.
And he got paid. He doesn't give a fuck.
He doesn't give a fuck. He's going to... They're going to be buddies, man. They're going to be cracking beers, like, within a week.
But, like...
He got paid. He doesn't care anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So why go through the whole, you know, bullshit of rattling off if he's on...
when he realized he was getting away with it.
Yeah, that's the best part.
Because he starts rattling him out faster and faster. It's just like, 315, ah, fuck you. Like, you know, like, he's just saying numbers.
Go on. Yeah. They know each other so well.
He might have known the first two numbers. And that it was like that third one where he was just like, I don't know. Yeah.
I think he just decided.
When he got away with that.
Yeah, because at that point, also, this is the only realistic scenario where he gets paid. Mm-hmm. Because, like, Anthony Hopkins is dead.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's, like, dead.
Yeah, Mitchell
would have killed him.
Yeah, Mitchell already fired him twice.
Okay. Yeah. Never mind. You're right. Okay, that makes more sense.
And it's like they probably have a mutual understanding now of like, well, now we can be buds. I got paid. The job's done.
I really think it was the story of friendship.
Is the ruse, though, is that for the, like, is that to, like...
It's for the board.
It's for the board, yeah. It's for just these people he probably barely ever really has to, like, go in contact with.
The only people in there are, like...
I mean, most of them are probably dead now.
The only people in the room are...
These guys did a speed run from the ground floor to 200.
Guns blazing.
The only people in the room are Alex, Julia, fucking Michelette, Vasendek, a tech, and like two guards.
These two guards are
probably loyal to Vasendek, mm-hmm, because this is how they get paid. So you would think...
Because they're dressed like motocross drivers, so yeah.
So you would think that, like, if he just decided to switch, then he would just turn and just shoot Michelette. And, you know, then they would go through with the ruse. But I guess
witnesses, legally speaking, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. They had to extract with the goal.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that's...
I guess the... Fine.
I'll take it.
The real hero was the cyberpunk mercenary tank commander that we met along the way.
Dude.
I guess. Now he has a mercenary as his best bud, and he has more money than God. So
this was Mick Jagger's film. I rest my case.
Sure. It might as well be.
Anyways, going back to, like, the symbolism of the jack. I don't know. Maybe it's, like, the fact that they are...
Bouncing a ball.
Oh, that's not... Well,
the whole that's point not. Of Jax is ball. To like
okay, to
step on
this.
Them.
Take as much as possible while you can. And so maybe it's referring to that. And, you know, if this movie is about. And
they call it, like, they snatched him out. Didn't they had a term for it? Plucked.
Something like that.
Yeah. It was when they did the weird spiderweb laser thing in the race car world.
Yeah.
The singularity plotting, obviously.
Yeah.
And
I don't give a shit. I fucking like this movie. Yeah, it's just one of those like dumb favorites that I'm just always like.
Thank God they didn't go into like explaining the whole time travel thing too much, because that would have been really annoying for a film.
Don't need to know.
Don't need to fucking know.
Bruce Willis and Looper says, I don't want to talk about time.
Yeah, I don't give a shit.
Yeah, like, you don't fucking have to. This movie is smart enough. It's dumb enough, but just smart enough to understand that's not fucking important to this film.
Yeah, and honestly, if they had, like, talked more, if they put more of an emphasis on the time travel, I don't think it would have been as like cyber, it wouldn't have been Cyberpunk, really.
Really?
Because it doesn't matter.
Because
it matters who he was, not where
he
came
inciting,
from.
Yeah, it's an inciting moment. It just, okay, this is what kicks things off. And it does. Yeah,
it's does. Very,
it's really very funny because it starts with,
said, I think.
It's very like, dude is in an F1 race car, which is insane. In a very precise, like, machine and the whole nine yards. And he dies in it and is pulled to Mick Jagger's convoy. And then there's a fist fight with a fucking electric thing, and everything goes off the rails for like 20 minutes. It's fantastic. It's just,
it really builds and just like delivers right away.
It's such maybe a good there's opening a little to bit of,
it seems like it might be a little slow at first, but no, they like move right past it.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Also, there's not even moving in a dirge. I mean, they're setting up a fucking F1 race. You
also,
know?
Like, it is terrifying to just suddenly wake up and now you have to run for your life in like the worst
over
city
and
ever.
Over,
like,
and over again.
Like I think it's a really good setup. Like, it is kind of scary having like, you don't know what the fuck's going on. You're running, everything's awful. And you
definitely, it makes Reese's ordeal in Terminator look like a cakewalk.
Right.
Yeah.
It's nuts. It's like, what if Reese had to run through the Warriors?
Yeah. I think
that would have been actually really fucking cool.
Actually,
I think that this is kind of like this is a narrative for, you know, growing up a little bit, because it's like, he wakes up one day and everything is awful, and he, you know, is like,
it doesn't help Emilio Estevez has like the face of a boy.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that does lend credence to what you're saying. And,
you know, it's kind of like, you know, 2007 was how long ago?
Too long. I'm old.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
we're old. We're all
enough
old.
There's enough of the story that is moved forward and revolves around technology that it's more than just like a dystopia tale.
Yeah, you know,
go ahead, then I'll go.
Oh, I guess that thought got away from me. Go ahead.
Well, it's just kind of like, there's like the lurching inertia of the city.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that it still exists in spite of everything that's wrong with it.
And, there wasn't, like I said, I don't think there was enough for that, because it just felt like generic Apocalypse City A.
Also, it implies that the Republicans won, because everybody has fucking guns.
Yeah. Yes. I think the setting for the city was fine. I don't think it was like enough, because it's obviously not going to be like, I don't know, Super Mario Brothers, but which is still my go-to for a batshit insane Apocalypse City.
You know, I do draw a lot of parallels between the two.
Yeah. It's hard not to.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But I think now my thought got away from me. God, I can't make fun of you anymore.
Well, it's that sweet spot between post-apocalypse and cyberpunk that I think,
it
sells and makes it believable. It's not just a reproduction of Blade Runner Street. It's definitely distinctive.
Yeah. I think unintentionally it ends up being one of those weird rare examples of like things working out
a little bit. Yeah. It was a weirdly happy ending for a cyberpunk film. I mean, it's still kind of depressing, because now he's like the CEO of an evil mega corporation, but he'll make it better.
That actually makes me interested in a sequel.
A little bit, yeah.
But it would be like Dune, you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah. My thought came back, actually. Ha ha. it also kind of predicted, because now we actually have to deal with the very real thing of billionaires being terrified to actually die. And putting a lot of money into the process of, you know, having a blood boy.
Yeah.
You know?
Very, very Brian Johnson.
Exactly.
like this is, these fucks think about this. And I guess this movie was made, it was like, imagine if billionaires spent so much money to evade death. Imagine if that ever happened. Well, now in the year 2024, that is something that is actually happening, where these fucks are trying so hard to not die.
They mentioned it too. They pull him back and he no longer has autonomy. He's a piece of property now.
Yeah.
No rights. Yeah. They can do whatever
he was
they want
purchased. There's around hands off.
Like, his body is not his.
Yeah.
Weird.
And that's the punkest thing about it, really, I think, is, you know, the fact that he, you know,
the bodily autonomy.
Yeah.
Well,
whether they realize it or not, making it, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Okay. I lost it.
Okay. We all got it tonight.
God damn. Is there like Aurora Borealis going on, or like,
I don't know. I forgot what phase of the moon it's supposed to be. I don't know.
Oh no. I had this weird thought about how, like, There were like weird parallels with certain characteristics of this kind of like fish out of water thing.
Mm-hmm.
And here it was interesting, where you had a capable person come forward and then roll with it very quickly.
Mm.
And, you know, there's the initial shock, but they don't dwell on it like a lot of movies do, or like TV shows where it's like, now I'm going to sit through this for 5 hours.
I mean, that's like, that's even back in the 90s, that's kind of a tired trope, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's always been. Yeah, for sure. Makes me think of Sheckley, too, in general. Like, I wonder, you know, what he would have thought of this.
I do like that they didn't waste too much time with, like you said, like him trying to like come up to this thing, because suddenly he's driving cars, which I already knew he can do, but like, you know, he was waving a gun around, you know, being kind of bad at it, which I appreciated. I don't think he really ever fires a gun.
No.
Oh, he shoots it a lot. It's unclear how many people he actually hits, but
almost everyone in this movie is a stormtrooper.
And you know what? They gave him a Kalashnikov, which I appreciated
at one point.
I thought that was, you know,
he did unload that clip on the magazine on the red tank.
Yeah.
And he did shoot a few times. Most of the scavs that were about to get the drop on Vesendik and so he does a fair amount of shooting people up, but not like overblown Arnold Schwarzenegger kind of way. You don't get the sense that he's like a pistolier.
Right. Yeah, he's not good at it. Like,
he's I'm good at the car thing. Give me the champagne truck. I'm good. But like, this pistol shit is
weird.
That's
why the idea of like, if this character was Reese, it would be a very different movie. You know,
it's like, you know, a nun gave me this pistol, right? That's like his vibe.
Yeah. I'm so pathetic. A nun had to give me a gun.
God. So, yeah. What do you think? Final thoughts. I think y'all should watch.
For sure.
Yeah, it's free.
It's absolutely fun. Check it out. Yeah,
it's free on Tubi. I'm going to put the potato version on our subliminal messages tab.
Yeah, does it need a reboot?
No,
I don't think so. Like, no, I mean, I think
it's final verdict. I take back my initial thought that perhaps it would be a good candidate for like a movie that needs a redo. I don't think it does. I think you guys are right. No. You convinced me.
Yeah, I think it's fine the way it is. I would actually be upset if they try to. I think it's a fine movie.
Yeah, it stands on its own.
Yep.
Yeah, it's great. I think that there could be a sequel of sorts made of it.
Yeah.
I mean, you just get like, I don't know, who's going? Is it? What's Emilio up to?
Well, in the next one, Emilio has to be the villain, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
And it would be great.
And that's something you have to pull someone out through time to get a new body.
Yeah, maybe.
No, he's got something more fucked up.
Probably, organ harvesting. You know,
he's like, I figured it out. That's exactly what it is. He's like growing the bodies in vats and shit.
Yeah, there we go. Not enough movies make the protagonist the villain in the sequel, which I would really like to see.
Yeah no, seriously. You know? I hate this, like, forever everything's working out and getting better for the
hero. I mean, at least we have, like, the Dune movies, which is doing a good job, because, boy, wait for the next one when, like, you know... People are already misinterpreting part two. It's amazing.
Oh, sure. Of course.
It's incredible.
You can't do anything in front of anybody.
No, you can't. And then, you know, I don't know. But the point, I'd like to see that trope more of, like, if someone's going to write something where it's like, they don't have to be the good guy for the whole series.
Dark is an excellent example.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I love
that. Oh, God.
Absolutely. Oh.
Boy, even, if you
want to... You know, cagey everybody is about, like, Heinlein, that fucking Predestination's great.
Mm. Yeah.
It's a great time loop.
Uh-huh. Hell yeah.
Mm-hmm. Airtight.
That's another great movie.
Yeah.
It's like
probably my favorite time travel movie.
Yeah.
I love the way they portrayed it, where it's just, obviously, like, things obviously gone and everything used to where they were. Looper's a lot of fun. Yeah.
Looper's a great movie.
It's been a while since I've seen it. It's been a while since I've seen Predestination, so...
Yeah, it bangs.
Yeah, I don't remember that one
too. Ethan Hawke rocks. Fucking Sarah Snook rocks. Like, it's wonderful.
So if you want to have your protagonist turn into the villain, time travel needs to be involved.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or it could just turn into an asshole.
Be inheriting a fucking
city. Turns out money corrupts.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm afraid of, like, what would happen if I made $300,000 a year.
Oh, God,
Oh, God.
My God.
Having a reliable source of food would be fun for a little bit.
Subwoofer butt plug.
There you go. That's healthy, though. That's not even.
Well, that's when you just start letting go. I mean,
That's when you get into the decadent stage.
Yeah, indeed.
Anyway, let's end on subwoofer butt plug.
You might as well. I don't feel like talking about the Kitty Cat Detective Agency. But just let me just say, check out Megaton Musashi Wired. It's got great side missions.
To the symbolism of the Jack, resembles a kitten's butthole?
Whoa.
Beep, beep. All systems are fully functioning. Running low life.exe. System optimization is less than nominal. Server damage detected. Please stop whatever you're doing and make your way to the nearest exit. Technical support is full of heat. Please vacate the area. I repeat. Please leave. Are you even listening to me?
Ooh.
I will see you. Error. Server block 3 is experiencing critical ignition.
That's right.
System failure imminent. I hope you are proud of yourself. Initiating the Low Life Podcast.